This is Jay Sekulow. Today's broadcast, we're going to tell you and explain to you who we're up against in the state-by-state battle for life.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Sekulow. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jay Sekulow.
Hey, everybody. We want to do a very special broadcast here because, obviously, we're still celebrating the tremendous victory in the overturning of Roe versus Wade in the Dobbs case. And as I said, our case, Bray versus Alexandria, served as the basis for that, where the court held an opinion by Justice Scalia that opposition to abortion was not discrimination against women. Our media teams have been putting together multiple documentaries on the abortion industry because you have to understand that it is, in fact, an industry. And we've got some very, very unique interviews that you're not going to have, really probably couldn't get again on some of these, that really shows what the abortion issue is, because as it goes to a state, to the states, we still have to educate people about what that means.
Yeah, and there's still this big business there, and it is essentially the pro-abortion lobby going after this. And it was an interesting piece that the team put together called Abortion Inc. We've done actually 4 or 5 different documentaries on the life issue, some historical, some about the future. Right. And with this one specifically, it does go into the money-making process of this. And I do find it ironic that you have someone like Planned Parenthood who proclaims only 3% of what we do is abortion services. And now this weekend you see they're closing nationwide.
They're having to close clinics.
Because why? It may be 3% of the services provided, but it's certainly not 3% of the income they produce.
Yeah, that has been an interesting phenomenon, by the way. They talk about all these prenatal services they provide and breast cancer screenings they provide and ultrasounds and all of this. But when it comes to actually staying in business, once Roe was overturned, they immediately said, the clinics are closing.
Yeah.
We have no business model that'll make this work. So what this film is going to do, what it did do, is show you the industry and the scope. And it's a bit of a wake-up call that if we think that when it goes to the states, it's just going to be a rollover, what this movie shows, it's not. Planned Parenthood, these organizations are big. NARAL, big. They're one of the... Sam Bennett says it often. Whenever he's on Capitol Hill, they're there. Now it's not going to be Capitol Hill. It's going to be Atlanta, the state capital. It'll be in Montgomery in Alabama. It'll be in Albany in New York, in Sacramento in California. I mean, this is what it's going to be. So we have to be prepared, Springfield in Illinois. I mean, I can go through the whole list. That's where the fights are going to be. But our adversary, the opponent, is going to be there approaching it differently because they have to now, but no doubt.
Yeah, it is this whole claim of these services are provided for women's support.
Overall
when
health.
You really break it down, you really see some of the horrific things going on, even beyond the horrific side of just the abortion process, the horrific side of, again, the money and the greed and everything that goes on within this industry. It hopefully is eye-opening, and you can take a look and really see what our team has put together to also give you some of the tools to combat some of those conversations that I'm sure you're having right now with your friends, with your family on social media, because it's much clearer when you have the facts.
They say that it was only 3% of their budget, of their income. Yet the clinics, the Planned Parenthood clinics, are saying they're closing them in these states. And they started doing that Friday. So was that for show? I mean, you wonder.
Obviously, there's the crisis pregnancy centers that are going the opposite direction. You actually can see what they're doing. They're doing great work. Also, obviously, the work of the ACLJ. And we are starting right now in our matching challenge. So,
yeah, I mean, we are in the matching challenge, folks. And obviously, we now have a state-by-state fight. Your support of the ACLJ makes a huge difference. Any amount you donate to the ACLJ this month, we get a matching gift, which means, as we've said before, if you donate $20, we get $40. You donate $100. We get 200. We encourage you to do it.
Yeah, and as you said, I think the overturning of Roe obviously was a massive victory that a lot of us never thought we'd see in our lifetime. However, what that does is open up likely 50 plus, actually, territories and all that, 50 plus cases that could happen and that we'll be part of in each and individual states.
Even in pro-life states.
Yes. Again, support the work of the ACLJ. We are part of our matching challenge right now. Be a part of it at ACLJ.org. Any donation made is effectively doubled by a member who is ready to match your funds. We'll be right back with more on Sekulow.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
It was my third pregnancy and my second marriage with an agreement there would be no more children. Of course, I never expected to get pregnant. And when I found myself pregnant, Roe v. Wade had just happened. It was all in the news. I called my doctor. He said, no problem. We can take care of it.
I remember walking out from the bathroom, holding the pregnancy test and telling my boyfriend at the time, I'm pregnant. You know, my mind was blank. I had no idea what to do. And so I guess I was looking to him for some answers. And I just remember he looked at me and he said, well, that's not a problem. He said, I've taken other girls to abortion clinics. We'll just take you to a clinic and get it taken care of. And, you know, I would like to tell you that I thought, well, wait a minute, you know, let's talk about this. But I didn't. I just said, okay.
Sat through the counseling part of it. And of course it was very, you're too young, you know, this is probably going to be your best option. I remember very, very vividly them saying that. So I thought, okay, we borrowed money from his best friend. And at the time that friend was the only one who knew about it, and made the appointment, and I went back the following week.
My mom said to me, she says, if you have this baby, you have to do it by yourself. She says, or you can have an abortion. And I thought to myself, wow, okay, I can have an abortion? Well, let's do that. I mean, I'm 14, I don't wanna be pregnant at high school. And so if it's coming from my mom, surely, you know, it's a good decision. So, okay, yeah, let's do that.
And a friend came running in and he said, Jonesy, your girlfriend's on the phone. She's crying. So I ran out, I answered the phone. And she just kept saying over and over and over again, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. It wasn't me. And then her father said over the other line, Jason, we know your secret and your secret's gone. And we took Katie to get an abortion.
In a landmark ruling, the Supreme Court today legalized abortions. The majority in cases from Texas and Georgia said that the decision to end a pregnancy during the first 3 months belongs to the woman and her doctor, not the government.
One of the things that most Americans think, and think wrongly, is that abortion began with Roe v. Wade. The truth is that every single civilization throughout all of antiquity and all the way up to the present time has had as a major component part of the culture, abortion.
I think from the very beginning, I came of a large family. My mother died young, 11 children. That made an impression on me as a child. Mm-hmm. I was a trained nurse, went among the people. I saw women who asked to have some means whereby they wouldn't have to have another pregnancy too early after the last child, the last abortion, which many of them had. So there's a number of things that are one after the other that really made you feel that you had to do something.
According to New York Health Department statistics, we now know that there are more African-American babies that are aborted in New York than actually born alive.
Of course, the lack of access for African-American women, in particular, to basic preventive health care, including family planning, is a huge problem in this country.
It is,
as well.
And I don't want to spend, and I agree with you, that's as a aforementioned time of places that we've served and worked in, but it does concern me that three times the African-American population is 13%, yet they're being aborted 3% of the population at 35%.
At the end of the 19th century, the beginning of the 20th century, there were a number of revolutionary figures who wanted to remake the world as a kind of revolutionary challenge, to remake it in a kind of pseudo-scientific fashion. They wanted to usher in Tomorrowland.
Planned Parenthood and Margaret Sanger, who was the founder of that organization, were eugenicists. And eugenicists are not killing babies because of some political issue. They're on a mission to purify.
Planned Parenthood began as a eugenics movement. This was to create the superior race. And the target of Planned Parenthood were those that they deemed to be less desirable. And they viewed the minorities in our communities as the least desirable.
She believed that sexuality is a powerful engine to drive social change. And so she sought to usher in this revolutionary new age, starting with human sexuality, and do it by scientific means, by eliminating unwanted people groups, what she called human weeds. And the human weeds were specifically identified as blacks, Hispanics, Eastern Europeans, Slavs. She believed that these were sort of lower on the evolutionary chain. And so to bring about this new age of a race of thoroughbreds, as she called them, you had to eliminate the bad gene stocks out of the human gene pool. Well, abortion, birth control, those kinds of things really emerged out of that ideology. It wasn't medicine. It wasn't to help women. It wasn't to give freedom of choice. It was really, how do we reshape society?
Planned Parenthood had a history, according to its foundress, Margaret Sanger, of targeting Negro leaders. And she said, Negroes are like weeds who need to be exterminated. We don't want that word to get out. So what we need to do is to cultivate some of their leaders, get them on our side, have them think that we want to help them. This is how Planned Parenthood went after African-American leaders. They still do it today.
The eugenics movement is dead. They don't call it eugenics anymore. Planned Parenthood doesn't use the word eugenics. But the fact of the matter is, the result that they're getting is exactly the same. It's the elimination of a race. Where are these abortions taking place? Minority communities.
Planned Parenthood, for the most part, for most women, is synonymous with abortion. So when women came in, even if they said they were there for options counseling, they generally were there just to get information about abortion.
They call it reproductive care. They'll call it health care. These are words that are utilized to give it a more palatable sound so that in the body politic, when the negotiations go on, they're talking about reproductive rights or women's health issues, when in reality, what we're talking about, and look at the procedure itself, we're talking about the destruction of an unborn child.
I said to Planned Parenthood, I'm having problems. And they says, well, you are pregnant. Let's do a pregnancy test. And then they says, you are pregnant, but you don't need a baby with everything that's going on in your life. We'll do something called a safe abortion.
I went into Planned Parenthood and they told me at that time, it's just tissue. It's like having your tonsils removed. And they actually paid for me. I was living in Colorado at the time. And that was before abortion was legal there. And they flew me, bought a plane ticket, flew me to California to have an abortion.
We had a script designed to overcome every objection, for that's what sales is. If you overcome the objection, you get the order. And in this case, this is the abortion. And we led her through this script. And she was scared, so she was easily led.
It's really a business built on a model of drawing women in for abortions.
I didn't know. I wasn't given any type of information as far as what it was. I was told that it was just a blob of tissue. I wasn't given any choices as far as ultrasounds or told me to, why don't you go home, think about it, and then come back. Nothing like that. There was nothing positive.
She would confess, I think I may be pregnant. We can take care of this. No one needs to know. And then the first question is, what's the first day of your last normal period? She figures that date and gives it to the so-called counselor, who's really just kind of a telemarketer over the telephone, because that's what they were trained to telemarket. And so she gives her the date, and she says, you're 8 weeks pregnant. Now, what did she do? She confirmed her pregnancy over the telephone. Now, you'd think she'd say, stop, how can you tell me that I'm pregnant? I mean, you don't even know me, you've not done a pregnancy test. But no, this is the pregnancy expert. The seed is planted, the fear confirmed, and then the next question is this good news or bad news? And she says, it's bad news. Of course it's bad news. She wouldn't be calling an abortion clinic if it were good news.
We would talk to them about gestational dates and what sort of abortion they could do, whether it was the medication abortion or the surgical abortion, depending on how far along they were. We would talk briefly about what the procedure would actually be like. I remember getting a directive from my supervisor, you know, that we didn't want to give them too much information about the abortion procedure. We didn't want to talk to them about risks associated with the procedure because we didn't want to scare them out of having an abortion.
I think what we need to look at is the business of abortion. And the business of abortion starts with a sale.
An organization is chopping up children and selling the body parts to the highest bidder.
They can call it whatever they like. The reality is they've been caught red-handed.
I was told that it was just a blob of tissue.
She looked me dead in the eye. She said, it's not a baby. It's a blob of tissue.
We really did treat women like second-class citizens.
Do not ever kid yourself. They know exactly what they're doing.
We were driven by this quota.
I didn't want the baggage, in all honesty, of having a child.
I pretended I was fine, but I wasn't fine.
She said, this is the best choice for you.
They're in the business of abortion. They worship at the altar of abortion.
Most people working in the abortion clinic make more money than they can anywhere else.
Does no one see what's really going on in America? Is this really who we're going to be?
That's what Planned Parenthood is. They're the judge, they're the jury, and executioner on life, and that's ridiculous.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
As for Planned Parenthood's funding, it receives $528 million annually in government money, which supports services like cancer screenings, treatment of STDs, and birth control. The group also performs abortions, but by law, none of the federal money it receives can go to abortion.
The idea that we give taxpayer funds to Planned Parenthood is absurd. They argue, well, those funds aren't used for abortion. But what it does is free up $500 million a year to be used for their other issues. And what's that? Usually fighting us in court. So we're funding them to fight us in court while we're going after their abortion practice. So the fact of the matter is, it may not pay for abortions per se, but it gives them a way to move the money around. It's a shell game.
After the videos were made public, I heard from friends and constituents of mine who for years had given money to different organizations thinking that they were supporting healthcare for indigent individuals, and found out that what had happened was, in the instance of Planned Parenthood, they basically had become an abortion service.
The challenge is with a Planned Parenthood that so much of their business is healthcare, a lot of these dollars will go to support other aspects of Planned Parenthood when they still stand alone as the single largest provider of abortion in the country.
And then you got to go to Capitol Hill. I mean, laws have to change. You got to move people's hearts, minds, and soul. And part of the mind moving takes place in Washington, D.C. And we've got a very active Office of Government Affairs that's very involved in this issue. And we're going to continue to push. And we're working with Congresswoman Blackburn and Congresswoman Black to make sure that women understand what's happening and that those children are protected.
I believe the best way to reach a woman who is considering an abortion is to get to her before the abortion even occurs. So we have a lot of pregnancy centers in the United States, and that's fantastic, but we need to grow the pregnancy center movement. And I don't mean, you know, plopping down new pregnancy centers. What I mean is growing the services from inside the pregnancy centers that we already have.
I think all of the things that have marked the pro-life movement in the past need to continue. Praying at abortion clinics is powerful and effective. I think that crisis pregnancy centers are the soft underbelly of the entire movement, and we need to be supporting our crisis pregnancy centers.
So if we can make pro-life medical centers, pregnancy centers, the first point of contact, women will be less and less likely to ever enter a Planned Parenthood facility.
I love the idea of portable ultrasound vans that go to high schools and that are parked outside of highly trafficked abortion clinics.
They go to where abortion-minded women would be, beachfronts, college campuses, you know, around clinics, and they just park in their presence. And as they see women going in to clinics, they, you know, stop them, introduce themselves, tell them what they're about. And majority of women, they're like, yeah. I want to see my baby, because that's what they ask. And do you want a free ultrasound? The latest numbers now is 4 out of 5 women who board a Stork bus who see their babies on the ultrasound choose life for their babies.
I believe when women are empowered to see that baby in their womb and know the truth of what they're about to do, that women choose life.
I've particularly done an ultrasound on a client because she, not because she didn't want her baby, but because she didn't want to stop using drugs and alcohol. And seeing the baby there confirmed for her that she needed to, that there was a life that she needed to take care of aside from her own.
The ultrasound is the absolute best way to show a pregnant woman her baby. And so many times when they see their baby in the womb, their decision to have an abortion is completely changed on the spot.
When you look at the evolution of the abortion industry over the last few decades, this is where science has a role to play. And think about it. When my children were being born, we didn't have the sonograms and the ultrasounds. But now with my children and with my grandchildren being born, you can have an ultrasound. You can see this baby in the womb. It is such a beautiful picture into the womb. And you look at those pictures and you try to figure out, okay, Who does he or she look like? So science has changed that. And that is something that we should hold on to and lock into. And it has helped to change the attitudes of so many women who are in my age group, who came through college in the 70s and heard all of that from the NOW gang and from women's rights, and now their children are having children and they're going, wait a minute, this is a baby.
There's a whole generation of millennials, 20s and 30s, that view the unborn child rights as a human rights issue. That unborn child has human rights, human dignity, human worth, and therefore human rights. So now the life of the unborn child is viewed not just medically as, yes, it's a life, but a life that deserves protection as a human rights issue. And that, frankly, has taken this in a whole different direction. And look at who's doing these documentaries. These are young people in their 20s and 30s that are doing this, are fighting for life at a whole new level, using technology to beat back the abortion juggernaut. And they're doing it successfully. We've got a whole group of young lawyers that are defending them. And our job as more senior lawyers is to make sure that we're training this next generation of lawyer to continue this fight for life. This is an intergenerational conflict. So you've got to prepare generations to deal with this. But I actually think we're winning. This is one of the social issues we're winning.
Those of us that believe in life know that we're on the right side of history. We understand full well children are children, and they're precious in God's sight, and they're precious in our nation's sight, and they're precious to parents. The more that we talk about children, the more the nation awakens to the realities of this. And I believe in the days ahead, America will look back on this season in history and will be mortified about what happened in the abortion industry, much like our nation is mortified about slave trade from a century ago. We look at it and say, I know that was legal. I know that was provided and protected by the courts, but we all understand it's wrong now. We will see abortion that same way in the days ahead as we awaken each other to the realities of the value of those children. So we continue to press the fight, and we continue to do it the right way to actually win hearts and minds. Again, not in a way that pushes people away, but people that can be drawn to the simple reality, shouldn't we stand up for life? Shouldn't we do that most basic thing as a culture? And I think we'll win it.
It's a humanity issue, but it's a moral issue. It's wrong to kill another human being. And there are laws that govern that outside the womb. The problem is there's no law protecting that unborn baby. And that's what I would love to see changed.
I think that every single human being's life is worth preserving, is worth protecting. I believe that justice demands that we stand in the gap for the helpless. And so one of the things that I hope that the pro-life movement will do is to continue to press forward both the moral and the intellectual claims of the Bible that every single human life matters.
The nation has not awakened to that's really a child. When the nation awakens to that's really a child in the womb, all the other provider issues will be taken care of.
What I'm hopeful for is that my grandchildren and great-grandchildren will look back at this moment of history, like slavery, like the Holocaust, a stain on our history, with horrible results, and say, I can't believe that a culture in the United States of America did this, allowed this to happen, but I'm sure I'm glad it doesn't happen anymore.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
It's the first time since 1992 a direct challenge to Roe versus Wade. It comes out of a Mississippi law. It was the Mississippi Solicitor General who was defending that law before the U.S. Supreme Court. It's been 2 years, 2.5 years in the making to get to the court, but it's there and it's on the merits, and the oral arguments have been finished. They finished about 5 minutes before we went on the air. I think this question from Justice Kavanaugh sums up what's really at issue here. Regardless of what side you're on of this position, on this issue, take a listen, Byte 46.
Be clear, you're not arguing that the court somehow has the authority to itself prohibit abortion, or that this court has the authority to order the states to prohibit abortion, as I understand it, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
And as I understand it, you're arguing that the Constitution's silent and therefore neutral on the question of abortion. In other words, that the Constitution's neither pro-life nor pro-choice on the question of abortion, but leaves the issue for the people of the states or perhaps Congress to resolve in the democratic process. Is that accurate?
Right. We're saying it's left to the people, Your Honor.
So, Dad, I wanted to go to you on that because I thought it was interesting there that both the state government, but also opening the door even for Congress at the federal level, if they were able to. I think more difficult for Congress at the federal level to ever get to agreement on this.
Yep.
But at the state level, it hasn't been. That's why some states are very pro-life and some states are very pro-abortion.
And that's the way the Constitution is set up. I mean, so that these matters go to the states. And we take a pro-life position, so we're going to always advocate for the unborn child. But I will tell you that this idea that the states have no role in this is what's created this political process in the first place. That's number one. Number two, this attack on the new justices by Justice Breyer and Justice Sotomayor and I think Justice Kagan too, I think Cece shows some real desperation. Now, I don't ever judge a case by the oral argument because you never know what's going to happen. But my goodness, it was really not appropriate, in my view, what they were doing there.
Yeah, I think they're like stoking the fire of this is, you know, a political decision. And it's really what the public demands is, you know, they want to keep Roe v. Wade. That's what the public demands. And if the court rules otherwise, who cares if it's based on the Constitution or not? We just need to do what we think is, you know, the most popular decision right now. And we're going to, like you said, kind of dog or demean anyone who's saying we're going to actually rely on the Constitution and not care whether it's right or wrong in the public's view.
It's the dogma lives deeply within you. It was said,
you're
now
exactly
it was repeated
right by
Supreme Court justices. Remember that the outrage at Senator Feinstein from saying that. I think this was the veiled way of doing it. It was the same. And again, this idea that these justices should bow to the political pressure. They should bow to the pressure of the left. Because they have no opinion here. I think this is Sotomayor making that same Byte 18.
Over 50 years have, or I should say 30 since Casey, have reaffirmed that basic viability line. Four have said no, two of them members of this court, but 15 justices have said yes, of varying political backgrounds. Now, the sponsors of this bill, the House bill in Mississippi, said we're doing it because we have new justices.
What is wrong with that? Because a state has to assert two things. They pass a law, and then when they have to defend the law, it costs state resources. So they're going to analyze, is it worth passing this law? Not just because we believe in it, but can we defend it? And are we willing to use the state's resources, taxpayer dollars, to go through the long legal process to fight this out? So, of course, you're going to analyze the makeup of the court.
This court, they move incrementally. And although I think this is our best chance to see Roe overturned, I'm not going to be surprised if they uphold the statute and don't overturn Roe.
It's, again, first time that the Supreme Court has heard on the merits a direct challenge to Roe versus Wade since 1992. We'll be right back on Seculum.
Thank you. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
The Supreme Court has overturned Roe versus Wade in a decision authored by Justice Alito. This is on page 69. We therefore hold that the Constitution does not confer a right to abortion. Roe and Casey must be overruled, and the authority to regulate abortion must be returned to the people and their elected representatives. This is, again, the official opinion out of the U.S. Supreme Court today. Roe versus Wade has been overturned. And the subsequent case, Casey, which reaffirmed Roe in 1992, has also been overturned. And a number of other cases, if you start looking within on pro-life free speech, freedom of speech, the freedom, again, in the way we talked about abortion distortion, they get into that in this opinion, that all these rights have been distorted when you talk about abortion, people's freedom of speech, their ability to speak out, that how it's somehow different if you're talking about a pro-life message. So while, again, today we celebrate the fight, we also celebrate all of you who support the work of the ACLJ and have been in this battle for decades, because this is the first step. It's a long first step, but it was the first step in the major fight to get this back to the states where we can have the direct dialogue, that both political and legal, to the people, where it's not just this Washington, D.C. issue and federal issue. And that is huge, folks, that we can take the battle to the states.
So I want to go through some history here because I think it's important, and some of you may not even remember this, but in the 1980s, there was a huge pro-life movement. It was called, started with the Summer of Mercy in Omaha, in Tulsa, Oklahoma, all over the country, Atlanta. And we represented Operation Rescue. It was very controversial at the time. They were engaged, as Jordan said, in acts of civil disobedience, means they blockaded access to the abortion clinics. The judges were issuing restraining orders and injunctions all over the country trying to shut these activities down. Tens of thousands of people participated in these. I mean, tens of thousands of people. And we had the opportunity to represent them. And it was, I will tell you something, originally I went into it thinking I wasn't going to do it. And circumstances, as I was going into the jail in Atlanta, it was very clear to me that I was supposed to represent Randall Terry and the leadership of Operation Rescue before the Georgia Supreme Court, the Texas Supreme Court, federal courts in New York, federal courts in Nebraska, federal courts in Oklahoma. I mean, it was massive litigation, California. And these cases really brought the attention of what the life movement was all about. But the advocates against life were utilizing the Ku Klux Klan Act of 1871 to stop these protests. And then the abortion proponents started using the 14th Amendment Equal Protection Clause as a basis to basically say that there's this unlimited right to abortion. And I argued twice at the Supreme Court, 1990 and 1991. I have the brief here. I've got the opinion here. And I'm going through this history because I think it's important. There's the brief on the screen. I argued the case twice, and my co-counsel argued the case twice as well. My co-counsel in the case was for the United States government, the Deputy Solicitor General of the United States. It was under the Bush administration, under George W. Bush. That's how long ago this was. And they argued in our favor, saying that the Ku Klux Klan Act could not be applied this way. That it was a violation of the Ku Klux. Applying it that way would be a violation of First Amendment principles. My co-counsel in the case, or the counsel for the United States government on our side, was the Deputy Solicitor General of the United States. His name was John Roberts. He's now the current Chief Justice of the United States. We argued the case together twice. It was very important in that case because the court concluded that opposition to abortion was not discrimination against women. And since these abortion advocates were utilizing the 14th Amendment, the Equal Protection Clause, as a basis to do this, this became very important. And when you get to the first substantive legal discussion in the opinion today in Dobbs overturning Roe versus Wade, the court starts the paragraph by saying, we discussed this theory, because this was a new theory that they started using to justify abortion. They said the one additional constitutional provision that respondents have now offered as yet another potential home for the abortion right, the 14th Amendment. And then they cite the briefs that were filed for that, including the United States government now under Joe Biden, which thought there was this right. But here's what the court said. The court disagreed with that on page 9 and 10 of its opinion, 10 and 11. The regulation of a medical procedure that only one sex can undergo does not trigger heightened constitutional scrutiny unless the regulation is a mere pretext designed to effect an invidious discrimination against members of one sex or the other. As the court has stated, the goal of, quote, preventing abortion does not constitute, quote, invidiously discriminatory animus against women. Bray versus Alexandria Women's Health Clinic, our case from 1992 and 93. Accordingly, laws regulating abortion or prohibiting abortion are not subject to heightened scrutiny. And what that means is rational basis applied. The court concluded that rational basis, you can protect the life of the unborn. It returns to the state. There was no constitutional home for the right to abortion in the 14th Amendment. Bray versus Alexandria. Opposition to abortion is not discrimination against women. Who would have thought that a case we argued in 1991 and again in 1992, decided in 1993, based on activities that took place in 89 and 1990, would end up as the basis, one of the basis for this critical Supreme Court decision. But there it is. So it's humbling. So I want to thank our entire team that worked on that case. I want to put that brief on the screen right now. And that's the brief that we filed in the Bray case. There it is. That brief is now 30 years old. I mean, 1991. I don't want to get emotional on this, but I am going to say that your support of us all the way back then, and we were a much smaller organization. We had a handful of lawyers, but look at the result that God gave in a case like this. So to me, it's particularly gratifying for all of us at the ACLJ, and it's a great opportunity for us to say thank you. But Cece, as I look at the opinion also, it's very clear also that the court here this clearly stated that there is no constitutional right to abortion.
Yes, I'm so thrilled that the Supreme Court got it right. They said there was no constitutional right to abortion, that it was egregiously, the Roe decision was egregiously wrong from the start, that Roe was remarkably loose in its treatment of the constitutional text. It held that the abortion right, which is not mentioned in the Constitution, is a part of a right to privacy, which is also not mentioned. And so therefore, Roe was on a collision course with the Constitution from the day it was decided. And this is just such a great day that, you know, we have recognized from the highest court in our nation that there is no constitutional right to killing a baby. And this issue will go to the states now. It's a great day, and I thank you for all your advocacy for 40 years being a champion of life. You've just done a great job, and you're a hero of mine.
That's very kind, but we could not have done this without the support of our team, and without the support of our members around the country. And some of you, when I'm still writing those thank you notes, I see from 1988, 1989, and you all were there with us. It was a, you remember this, Jordan, you were a kid. It was a very bold move for us to, some of these guys were and gals were would come to our house for meetings and stuff. I mean, it was a very bold move to represent the new act of civil disobedience.
Yeah, I mean, they were in prison, and we'd go visit them in prisons. Yep. Again, it brought the attention to the issue. So it took people who were radical enough to, engage in peaceful civil disobedience, and the way they were treated by police was
horrendous.
Really horrendous. The way they were dragged away, their arms broken, and the tactics used. But what it did was it forced the conversation in the country, a conversation that had now been going on for 30 years since that movement really started. And when people then started looking at it, and so you saw a shift. It wasn't just the Catholic Church anymore talking about the life of the unborn or the life beginning at conception. It made the entire really Christian movement, that's where it started, and the evangelical movement take a look and say, why are we silent about this in the Baptist Church? Why don't we talk about these issues? And when people started talking about them, it became a much bigger issue. And then it became, think about this, I don't like, this is not to play down, but it became mainstream in the sense that a major political party in the United States ultimately adopted a pro-life position, the Republican Party. And so it became an issue that was not, that started off as being one that was, it was not mainstream at all. And it became front and center, almost in a sense, I know we don't talk about litmus tests, but in the Republican Party, it is part of it. I mean, that is part of the platform. So it went from being something all these radicals talked about, these kind of extreme protesters talked about, to something that became part of mainstream discussion in the United States. And at the tip top of that discussion was always two things. One, what restrictions could you put in place under the previous precedent while Roe versus Wade was still the law of the land? And of course, ultimately, how do you get to a point where you overturn Roe versus Wade? Let me say something too. A lot of you will criticize Mitch McConnell a lot, and you call him a rhino. And listen, you can have your whatever political view you want. He made sure Justice Amy Coney Barrett got to the Supreme Court in record time, with a lot of pushback coming from the left and the mainstream media, and she was the decisive vote today. Without her on the court, this decision does not overturn Roe versus Wade. Mississippi's law probably would have been upheld, which would have been a victory in itself, but Roe versus Wade would still be the law of the land. So who nominated? Of course, President Trump. When everybody said, don't do this, you don't have time, there's not the right time, we can't do this right now, you can't replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg with Judge Barrett, now Justice Barrett, and they ignored those calls, and they got it done. And today, you see, again, what happens with those nominees. That is the decisive vote on this case. We'll be right back.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial at a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack. It's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Secular. We're going to go back to the phones and also talk about one of Planned Parenthood's first legal challenges since the Roe versus Wade decision overturning Roe versus Wade on Friday. They are back in court in Utah. We'll talk about that in a bit, but I do want to keep answering people's questions on Roe, and it's understandable that people still have those questions. Let's go to Robert in Florida first on line one. Hey, Robert.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. My question is, since the Dobbs case was decided on a 5-4 vote, if Joe Biden were to be able to appoint another Supreme Court justice, what do you think the likelihood of would be that the new court would quickly move to reinstate Roe versus Wade?
It would totally depend. Well, first of all, it was 6-3 that the law was constitutional. Now, 5 justices said Roe should be overturned. 6 said that the Mississippi law that bans abortion after 15 weeks was, in fact, constitutional. So they'd have to have a lot of replacement. It would depend on who the justice is. But I think this decision is safe for the term. But I think what we have to really focus on, which we're going to, is you look at, like, Utah. Planned Parenthood filed a lawsuit literally within hours of the decision coming down.
They did. They went after Utah. Utah had a trigger law, so abortions are banned in Utah except for the life of the mother, rape and incest, and severe brain abnormality of the baby. And, of course, then Planned Parenthood sued immediately, and they allege that the law violates Utah's constitution in 7 ways. And these are right to determine family composition and to parent, right of equal protection, right to uniform operation of laws, right to bodily integrity, rights of conscience, rights to privacy, and the prohibition of involuntary servitude.
So slavery.
They're basically trying to do what Roe just said, the justices in the Dobbs decision said, you know, Roe created these rights from the Constitution and they can't do that. And now they're trying this in Utah, and Utah Supreme Court has not previously found an abortion right in the Utah Constitution.
But that's where the battle's going to be now. I mean, it's going to be these state courts.
Yeah, I mean, it got to the point where they're arguing an anti-slavery position in the Utah Constitution is one of their claims, the cause of action here. Involuntary servitude,
yes.
Equal protection, meaning that this is somehow anti-women. And so, I mean, you've got, again, they are what, in this case, which is interesting, is that unlike some of the states which have some interesting constitutional amendments that have been made or laws on the books, they're asking the Utah court to do what the Supreme Court just rejected doing, which is reading into the Constitution a bunch of rights that aren't there and legislatively haven't been legislated by the people's representatives.
And the Supreme Court of the United States has held since 1991, it was reincorporated on Friday, that opposition to abortion is not discrimination against women. So the whole Equal Protection Clause, which is where all this is emanating from, doesn't apply. But look, we're not shocked that Utah went and did this. We'll take more calls.
Yeah, 1-800-684-3110. Let's go to Cheryl in New York on line 6. Hey, Cheryl.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. So I live in New York, and, I heard that the governor is, of course, trying to make this a welcoming state for women to come here and have abortions. I'm totally against it. I am pro-life all the way. I'm a member of ACLJ Action. Great. I wanted to know if at some point is ACLJ going to go after New York, because they're doing abortions, I believe, up until birth if it affects the life of the mother.
So our plan, Cheryl, I don't want to give too much away to our opponents, but our plan is, and we're looking right now at all 50 states, and what we'll initially do with the resources we have available is pick a couple of similarly situated states that are very pro-life, a couple in the middle, and a couple like New York. And we are going to do work there. One is to expose. I think what we first have to do is run ad campaigns to expose to the voters, Cheryl, what exactly they mean when they say abortion with no restriction. And as you said, abortion up until birth. Sometimes they're using language now that would allow them to have the birth and then decide whether or not to kill the child.
It's the postnatal perinatal.
Yeah, heard that from Governor Northam of Virginia. I remember he said that, you know, keep the child comfortable while you decide whether or not to kill them or not. So we are going to expose the politicians with the real facts. Because so far, this has been really focused at the federal level, and they've been able to hide behind Roe and Washington, D.C. They can't do that anymore in New York. It's going to be New York that has those laws, not the federal government, not the United States government. New York politicians who have to own that, and we're going to make sure they own it.
Yeah, and I think also
And I appreciate you being a member of ACLJ Action.
Yeah, by the way, you could join ACLJ Action. It's $25 once a year. You can donate more if you'd like, but that's all it is to become a member of ACLJ Action. We encourage you to do. That's going to be the an arm of the ACLJ, so to speak, separate organization, so that we can get in on the legislative side of this and, like you said, take ads out. We're exposing what is at play when you say, when someone says they're, that's why these polls are meaningless. Someone says they're pro-choice. Well, then if you ask them, do you believe an abortion can take place in the 7th, 8th, or 9th month of pregnancy? Well, no. But yet a number of states allow it.
Right. Not only allow it, but now we see legislation where we see the perinatal language, which means after abortion. So the baby is born, and now you can kill a baby that is born alive, and they have rights now that they're trying to push through to kill a baby after it's born. So these are the things that we'll call to the forefront, and people, like you said, aren't going to be able to stand behind the federal government and the Roe v. Wade decision.
Let's continue to take phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. Sally in North Carolina, on line 3. Hey, Sally.
Hi, good morning. The question I have is, with this overturning of Roe v. Wade, does this include the abortion pill, or is this specific to the procedure?
Okay. I think the answer is it could. It depends on when you're utilizing the abortion pill based off the state law. So is that pill effective past 15 weeks? If so, and the pill is prescribed after 15 weeks, that knowingly by a doctor, that could be a violation. If it's, again, prescribed before, then that would not violate currently, I think, Mississippi's law. But right now we're talking about just the 10 states that have trigger laws going into place. This is going to be a huge part of the debate, though, is the medical. When we say that, it's using medication abortions. This is not the morning surgery after pill.
Right.
This is RU46 and other more invasive pills, which usually you need to be under a doctor's because people can bleed out.
So the court said there was not a constitutional right to abortion in the Constitution. They didn't say that there was not a constitutional right to a medical surgery procedure abortion. They said there's not a constitutional right to abortion.
Right. So there is no right to kill your baby. And that doesn't matter what the procedure
under the federal
is. Right. Whether it's a pill, whether it's surgical, this will be the states then are going to have to frame their legislation to say what they will allow and what they will not allow. And that will be surgical abortions, medical abortions. That'll have to be addressed in the state's the legislation.
This is a good time to remind everybody that we've launched ACLJ Action. And this because so many of these questions fall within the purview of what ACLJ Action can do. Why don't you take a moment, Jordan, here as we close the broadcast?
Well, I say this too. It's in line with the South Dakota governor, Kristi Noem, announcing that she will ban abortion pills that are prescribed online. So, and we represent the governor already in an abortion pro-life speech case involving women in pregnancy centers and informed consent. But ACLJ Action exists to do three things. The first thing is to, one, go right into the states. Not for court purposes. We've got ACLJ for that, but for your legislative purposes. So we go right into the states. What it enables us to do is, one, hire lobbyists that are working on behalf of you, so that when we're writing this legislation and new legislation on life and protecting the unborn, we are part of that, and we're having our team review it to make sure, or sometimes write it to make sure it's the best legislation possible. That's the same thing when we talk about those constitutional amendments that are necessary. We very much will be drafting some of those constitutional amendments for state legislators. We'll also be doing something you'll see more publicly through ACLJ Action is ad campaigns, calling out the bad politicians, praising the good ones, praising the good policy as well. So check it out. ACLJAction.org is going to be front and center in this battle. You can join as a member.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at ACLJ.org.